Do you know how the food you eat is raised? If you'd like to, stay tuned to Radio Curious. I'm host and producer, attorney Barry Vogel, and in this conversation, we'll visit with Jean Bauer, author of Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food. Jean Bauer is the founder of Farm Sanctuary, a safe place for farm animals that are frequently taken from the slaughter lines or thrown into heaps of dead animals as if they were dead. I spoke with Jean Bauer in the studios of Radio Curious on March 22, 2008. So, Jean, what got you involved in food and the way food is produced?
Well, you know, I grew up being encouraged to, you know, sort of follow the path that most people follow, to get a job, make a decent living, and, you know, but I saw so many problems around me. I saw animals that were homeless in the streets, people that were homeless in the streets, people that were unhealthy, the environment being destroyed, and I wanted to do something to address those issues. And the more I learned, the more I came to recognize how central food is to all of this. The way we eat has profound consequences for our own health, for the well-being of animals, for the well-being of the planet. And most people are eating in a way that is bad for themselves and tragically killing themselves in many cases. It is also destroying the planet and causing animals to suffer horribly. And it doesn't have to be this way. So in 1986, I co-founded Farm Sanctuary with the idea of exposing the cruelty of factory farming and stopping the cruelty of factory farming and encouraging people to live in a way that's more consistent with their interests and values.
The cruelty of factory farming, what do you mean? What is that?
Well, on today's industrial farms, animals are treated like inanimate commodities, not as living, feeling creatures. So they're put in small cages where they can barely move. In the case of egg-laying chickens, for example, they're in cages that are so small that they can't even stretch their wings. These cages, each hen is given about as much space as the size of a piece of paper, or it's actually less than a piece of paper. So they're packed very tight.
A piece of 8.5 by 11 letter paper.
That's right. That's right. They're actually given about 2/3 that much space. So they're, and that's how they live their whole lives for about a year before they're then sent to slaughter. And, you know, most people don't really think much about where their food comes from. But most people are unwittingly supporting that kind of cruelty. And other animals live similarly confined lives.
Unwittingly supporting that kind of cruelty. What do you mean?
I think, you know, when people buy food in the grocery store or in restaurants, there's often a tendency not to think very much about where that food's come from. And the conditions that most animals in this country are raised under are brutal. And when citizens see these conditions, you know, by and large, they consider them to be unacceptable. But when people buy foods, you know, meat, milk, and eggs specifically, and don't really think about where those products come from, they're often supporting a system that they would be appalled by. So that's what I mean when I say they unwittingly support this abuse, because most people would generally not feel good about it.
Well, let's start when you say meat, milk, and eggs. Let's start with milk and eggs. Considering that some people who would say they're vegetarians will still drink milk and eat eggs.
That's right. You know, a lot of times vegetarians assume that because cows are not immediately killed for milk, that those cows may live a decent life. And the same assumption, I think, holds in the case of egg-laying chickens. But, you know, these animals are perhaps some of the most exploited animals on today's farms.
What are examples of that exploitation?
Well, for a dairy cow to produce milk, she has to be impregnated. And on modern dairies, these cows are forced to have a calf every year. The calf is taken away from them immediately at birth, and the cow is pushed to produce about 10 times more milk than is normal. So their bodies are under intense stress and strain, and they end up going to slaughter at a very young age. In a healthy environment, a cow will live 20 years, but on today's modern dairies, they're sent to slaughter after just about 3 or 4 years in production.
Pushed to produce more milk than they would under normal circumstances. What is that? What is the push?
They're given high energy concentrates. They have been genetically altered and manipulated to produce more milk. Some of these cows are also being given hormone shots to increase milk production. And, you know, in a normal environment, a cow would produce about, you know, for her calf. And a calf will eat about 10 pounds of milk per day. But on modern dairies, these cows are now commonly producing 100 pounds of milk per day.
So what do we know about the content of that milk, the 100-pound content, with chemicals or whatever, the undesired consequences that are there in the liquid compared to the 10 pounds for the calf?
Well, these cows that are pushed so hard to produce so much milk are under intense stress, and they are often sick, and their udders are often infected. Mastitis is an infection of the udder that afflicts about half the dairy cows in the U.S. at any given time. And so their milk has a lot of pus in it, basically. Also, there are chemical compounds that we don't really understand all that well. You know, when these cows are being fed Posilac, which is a growth-promoting hormone, and it enhances their milk production, or I should say increases their milk production, it also changes the milk. And, you know, scientists argue about how problematic that may or may not be. And the bottom line, though, with a lot of it is we really don't know the answer in terms of just how bad certain chemical compounds are. And unfortunately,
we haven't been doing it long enough.
That's right. We have not been doing it long enough. And there's actually an interest in not finding out. You know, there's sort of a don't look, don't find approach to disease on today's farms, to problems with the food that we ingest today. And unfortunately, we will not find out probably until there's some real disaster, when somebody gets sick or dies, or when a lot of people get sick, and we then start recognizing how certain practices have led to those illnesses.
Eggs and chickens, how do they fit in the factory farm system?
Well, the most egg-laying chickens today live in battery cages, which are small wire enclosures that are lined up in rows and stacked in tiers in huge factory warehouses. The birds are packed so tightly they can't even stretch their wings. And they live this way for about a year, and they're constantly rubbing against these metal bars in the cages. Their feathers rub off. They have bruises and abrasions on their bodies. And after about a year of this, they're killed because they're no longer productive.
So in your experience, where does this occur?
This occurs all over the country. Factory farms are the main form of animal production today in the U.S.
So are you telling us that the milk that we drink, or that the eggs that are available for purchase in the stores, are produced in this way?
Yes.
How do you know?
I've been to these places, and I've also studied these issues. I went to Cornell University. I got a master's in agricultural economics. I've been visiting farms for the past 20-plus years. To observe conditions firsthand and to document what was happening. And I've seen this. And when I was at Cornell, I actually studied the dairy industry and worked with some dairy farmers who are trying to get out of the typical approach, which was mass production.
I want to talk about alternatives, but before we get there, let's talk about meat production, beef, pork, lamb. How does that work? Is that also part of this system that you're describing?
Yes. The pork industry is especially industrialized, and there are different phases of production. It starts with the sows, the breeding females, who live most of their lives in small 2-foot-wide gestation crates where they can't even turn around or walk, and that's how they're kept for years. Once those sows give birth, their piglets are taken away at about 3 weeks of age and put in these warehouses where they're kept in pens, standing on slatted floors for their whole lives, so their feces can fall through these slats and collect in manure cesspools, basically. And the piglets are then raised and sent to slaughter, usually at about 6 months of age. And then at the slaughterhouse, you know, they're hung upside down by a back leg, and they go down this assembly line where their throats are cut and they're slowly dismembered. Sometimes these slaughterhouse assembly lines are moving so fast that the animals are not adequately killed, and they may be alive when they are starting to be dismembered. So it's a brutal process, and you know, these animals are just regarded as commodities. So there's not been a tendency to want to treat them or to consider them as living, feeling creatures. And that's really the heart of the problem, that we have commodified sentient life, and the animal's well-being is very low on the list of priorities.
Sentient life?
sentient life. Yeah, living, feeling creatures that have sensitivities, that have feelings, that, you know, beyond just their physical feelings, they have emotional feelings. You know, animals form bonds with their friends. They form bonds with their parents and their siblings. And these types of facts and these types of this type of sentience is absolutely ignored and not considered by agribusiness.
Why not?
Well, I think that recognizing these animals as sentient beings and recognizing that they have feelings and that they do have these types of qualities would make those who exploit and slaughter them have to think about what they're doing. And I think it would also require citizens who sort of mindlessly eat meat, milk, and eggs to rethink what they consider to be appropriate food products. You know, we don't need to kill and eat animals. In fact, we're healthier if we don't kill and eat animals. And I'm talking both physically as well as emotionally and spiritually even. You know, killing is a violent, bloody act. It is something that requires a person to kind of harden themselves and close off part of their heart. And, you know, I feel bad for people who work in slaughterhouses, and I wish nobody had to do that. But I also feel that consumers who are buying these products are supporting a system that is violent and unhealthy, and it's totally unnecessary.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Gene Bauer in the studios of Radio Curious. Gene is the author of Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food. I'm Barry Vogel. This is Radio Curious. Gene, in terms of the food production for the 300 plus million people that live in the United States, if meat, milk, and eggs produced in the way that you describe were changed, what would be available to eat?
Well, you know, I would ideally like to see people eating plants instead of animals. And our animal farming system today is grossly inefficient. And there are external costs associated with it that are not adequately accounted for. You know, for example, taxpayers subsidize the production of cheap corn and soybeans, which are used for feed for animals. Now, rather than doing that, and rather than using those plant foods to feed to farm animals, it'd be much more efficient to eat them directly. I think we're starting to see a recognition of the problems associated with industrialized animal farming, and with that, a move towards smaller farms, which I think is good, but oftentimes those small farms, you know, are also problematic, and there are certain inherent problems associated with exploiting animals for food. So I think we're going to see, over time, a movement towards a new kind of agriculture, and ideally, it would be plant-based.
We talk about the concept of Old MacDonald Had a Farm, and we sing about it as children. Much of what was fed on MacDonald's farm was meat, eggs, and chicken. Do you feel that it's inappropriate for our species to eat that kind of food that's not raised on a family farm?
I think that as time goes, we consider our activities and our behaviors, and we evolve. You know, historically, it was considered to be acceptable for people to have slaves. But as time went, we recognized that that was inappropriate. Today, it's generally considered to be acceptable to slaughter animals for food. But we don't need to do that. And I think that killing other animals is an inherently violent act, and it's one that's not necessary. And I believe that there will be a time when we look back and say, you know, that was unnecessary and we've changed. So I'm hopeful that we will move away from exploiting animals. It's something that we don't need to do. And in fact, we're much healthier if we don't do it.
In the first part of your book, in a chapter called The Road to Lancaster, you talk about your early years growing up in the Hollywood Hills, where I grew up, and in fact we had similar courses, similar paths in our lives. But you say the most important thing of all in any case is to recognize that you can't control others, only yourself. I see that you've controlled yourself. You've mentioned that you are vegan, that you don't eat any animal product or byproduct. But how about controlling others?
Well, that's a very good point. And I really do believe that the most important thing is for each of us to act in a way that is responsible and is consistent with our own values and our own interests. And a big part of our job is really just to educate people and encourage them to live in a way consistent with their values and interests. And, you know, most people today are not doing that in the United States anyway. Most people are eating foods that are not making them healthy. Heart disease and cancer are the top two leading causes of death in the U.S., and the risk of both of those can be significantly decreased by adopting a vegan diet. And most people are also eating in a way that is inconsistent with their values. Most people don't feel okay about what happens to animals on factory farms, at least according to the polls that we've done and that others have done. And still, people are buying these products and supporting these systems that are upsetting to them. So we think it would be best if people ate in a way and lived in a way that they felt good about. But each person ultimately has to make that choice for themselves.
Farm Sanctuary was involved in California in November of 2008 in the election in what was called Proposition 2. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Proposition 2 was a serious effort here in California that involved thousands of volunteers that went out to the streets to collect signatures to put a measure on the ballot to outlaw three of the cruelest confinement systems currently in use. And these include veal crates, where young calves are chained by the neck for their whole lives, unable to turn around or walk, gestation crates for breeding pigs, which are two-foot-wide enclosures where breeding sows live for years, unable to walk, turn around, or exercise. And the third confinement system that Proposition 2 addressed are battery cages for egg-laying hens. And these are small wire enclosures where hens are packed so tightly they can't turn around or stretch their wings. So Proposition 2 passed with over 63% of the vote, and we were very happy about that. It sent a signal to agribusiness that its practices are outside the bounds of acceptable conduct in our society. And I think that as a result, agribusiness is going to start making changes.
What changes did Proposition 2 require be made?
Well, it was a very simple measure. It only required that these animals have enough space to turn around and stretch their limbs. So it was a very modest measure in terms of what it requires legally. But its passage will outlaw these three cruel systems. And agribusiness is now complaining that it's going to cost them millions of dollars and so on. But, you know, these systems never should have been adopted in the first place, as far as I'm concerned. They're cruel, they're disrespectful, they're unhealthy. They allow animals to be confined in such small areas that you have this enormous collection now of manure around these factory farms, which gets into water and pollutes neighborhoods. So, you know, these factory farms are bad for everybody, and except for a few folks that make a lot of money on them. And Proposition 2 was a statement against that type of farming, a statement for more sensible policies when it comes to how animals are treated on farms. And I think it codified societal values in that, you know, we as a society do not support cruelty. We do not like to see animals suffer unnecessarily. And factory farming clearly represents unnecessary abuse.
Yet, as a society, we have laws that preclude cruelty to animals, domestic animals, our cats and dogs, but they don't extend to farm animals.
That's exactly right. Farm animals are specifically excluded from the Federal Animal Welfare Act. And, you know, most people want to believe that farm animals are protected, but in fact they aren't. Farm animals are also excluded from many state anti-cruelty laws, as long as the practices that are being conducted are considered to be common practices. And common practices are those that the farming industry adopts year after year. So if the farming industry decides it's okay to put animals in very small cages, or if the farming industry decides it's okay to cut off the tails of pigs or other animals, or to notch the ears of animals, or to cut off parts of the beaks of chickens, that's considered to be a common practice, and it's therefore legal according to many of these state laws now.
There are two venues of Farm Sanctuary, one in Watkins Glen, New York, not too far from Ithaca and Cornell University, and another near Orland, California, about 80 miles north of Sacramento. I know in Orland, one of the large stockyards, and I believe slaughterhouses, exists. Is what's the dynamic between the Orland Stockyards and Farm Sanctuary in Orland?
Well, you know, it's quite interesting. We are in neighborhoods where there is a lot of farming and a sort of attitude towards animals that is very different than our attitude towards animals. So, you know, we sometimes, there's some tension there. But, you know, we state our case and we encourage these types of facilities and the people that work at them to treat the animals with some degree of respect. And that's the case also in Watkins Glen, New York. That's the case in rural areas across the U.S. where we have visited and spoken to farmers. But, you know, Orland is a beautiful place. It's a couple hours north of the Bay Area. And we're right across the street from a big lake, Black Butte Lake. We're near Chico. And increasingly, people who with a sensitivity towards animals that's more aligned with farm sanctuaries are coming to the area. And we like to see that.
Going back to your years before you became a political activist and a social activist with regard to food, I guess my question is, what drew you in this area? What alerted you? And I know that at one point there was a sheep who changed your life.
Yeah, Hilda. Well, you know, Farm Sanctuary started back in 1986, and at the time I didn't have a whole lot of familiarity with exactly what was happening to animals on farms. So we spent a lot of time visiting farms and stockyards, and at one facility in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, we walked around and came to a pile of dead animals behind the stockyard. And there were dead cows and dead pigs and dead sheep. The maggots were so thick you could hear them buzzing. And off of this dead pile, a lamb lifts her head. And that was Hilda. We took her to the veterinarian, thinking she'd have to be euthanized. But as he started poking around and checking her out, she started perking up. And within 20 minutes, she was standing on her own. And she lived with us for more than 10 years. So that is an example of the callousness that these animals are treated with. This is a living animal who was thrown literally on a pile of dead animals behind a stockyard, just left to die. And at Farm Sanctuary, she became our friend, and her life was transformed. And, you know, as we saw her heal and recover, in some sense, our life also was transformed. And, you know, that's what Farm Sanctuary is about. It's about transformation, and it's about recognizing these animals as our friends, not our food, treating them with compassion and respect, and challenging the callous attitude whereby they are commodified and seen as nothing but pieces of meat from the day they're born to the day they're killed.
I can't help but going back to the image that you speak of as a 10, 11-year-old child, the oldest of a family of six children. You and your younger siblings were part of the Screen Children's Guild and were involved in commercials for some of the larger fast food organizations, which I will refrain from mentioning.
That's right. That's right. I grew up in Hollywood, and my mother got me and my brothers and sisters into the Screen Children's Guild, where we worked in commercials and television and movies, usually as in the background. So I wasn't usually an on-camera performer. I was in the background somewhere. But yes, I did appear in a couple of commercials for some fast food restaurants, and I'm now trying to make up for that.
It seems that you are. Was there a turning point? Was there something that pointed this life's work out to you?
You know, I've always just wanted to try to make a positive difference. And, you know, I worked, you know, in high school at Children's Hospital with children who had terminal illnesses just to spend a little time with them. I, you know, got a degree in sociology from Cal State Northridge and worked with adolescents who were having difficult times. And I also then started getting involved in environmental work, got involved with consumer organizations. And as time went, I just recognized that factory farming was, you know, causing all kinds of harm. And so, you know, the more I learned, the more I recognized that this was an issue that needed to be addressed. So it wasn't any single event, but it was a variety of events and just meeting different people and learning different things and reading different books that brought me to where I am today.
Gene, Farm Sanctuary has a website.
Farm Sanctuary's website is www.farmsanctuary.org. And there's information there about visiting the farms, both in Watkins Glen, New York, and Orland, California. There's a section about getting involved and what you can do to help make a difference. There's updated information about various issues, including legislation that's being proposed across the country in various states and some in Washington, D.C. And there's stories about the animals that live at farm sanctuaries. So you can get to know some of the individuals who we've been able to rescue over the years and who they are and what their lives are like.
I find it also kind of personally satisfying and gratifying. I, too, grew up in Hollywood. We went to high schools that were very close to each other. We both end up doing similar kinds of work, having spent time in Rhode Island and Cornell and other places around the country. So I'm very pleased to have you on Radio Curious. And before we close, the two questions that I'd like to ask. Is there something important, an idea, a fact, or an idea that's maybe coalesced recently that you can tell us about?
Something that's been in my mind a lot lately is just how human beings are such social animals. We really tend to do what those around us do. And, you know, I grew up eating meat, milk, and eggs and not thinking very much about it. And I didn't really make a conscious choice to eat meat, milk, and eggs. So it's important for each of us to, you know, critically evaluate our behavior and to be open to the idea that we can do something differently and to be individuals and to recognize that just because everybody is doing something, it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. So we are very social creatures, and we want to be accepted by our friends and by other people. But it's important to also act in a way that we feel right about. And too often people are doing things, I think, because they think they're supposed to, when perhaps they really don't feel right about it and shouldn't be doing it.
Are there times when you yearn for your childhood comfort food?
Not so much. You know, I've never been hugely food focused. But, you know, when I've been doing this book tour, I've often answered questions about what I eat. And it's not the most exciting food. So I'm now actually trying to eat in a way that's healthier and more interesting. And I'm trying to become more of a foodie. But I've never really had a huge sort of fixation on food.
And finally, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Yeah, I'm currently reading a book called Calling All Radicals by Gabriel Thompson, who is an organizer in New York City. And he's very much of the mind that change happens from the bottom up through the grassroots, working with people and allowing those people to tell their stories. And so I really think that's a good approach, and I've really been enjoying that book.
Gene Bauer, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Gene Bauer is the organizer and founder of Farm Sanctuary. He's also the author of the book, Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food. The book that he recommends is Calling All Radicals, How Grassroots Organizers Can Save Our Democracy, by Gabriel Thompson. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.